How do I know what I think until I see what I say?
The Green Notebook, carried by military leaders around the world. Within those pages are sweat, tears, triumphs, and the hard-won lessons of life. Lessons worth sharing. Each week, the team dives into the notebooks of military leaders, business professionals, authors, athletes and coaches, and entertainers to share lessons and help you lead with the best version of yourself.
Today's episode is sponsored by Adaton. I got to know Adaton's co-founders, James and JJ, several years ago. They are former Army NCOs who have years of experience in the tech industry. They have firsthand knowledge of what it's like to serve and truly listen to service members in order to understand the critical challenges they face today. Adaton understands that most military jobs are not performed behind a computer desk. They kept hearing leaders ask for a better way to support and care for their people, regardless of their location. This led to the development of Adaton's flagship software product, Muster, spelled M-U-S-T-R. Muster is like a digital knife hand. It streamlines the daily task of ensuring people accountability, resilience, and automation of data calls that currently rely on phone trees, text messages, and manual data entries into Excel spreadsheets. Muster revolutionizes the way leaders take care of their people, which is their primary responsibility, not sitting for hours in front of their computers. Many branches of the military are now utilizing Muster. The time is right for leaders to get involved and see the impact it can have. If you're interested in making an impact or learning about what other units are doing, reach out to Adaton. For a limited time only, listeners of the From the Green Notebook podcast can try out Muster for free. Visit adaton.io/FTGN to get started. That's adaton.io/FTGN. Welcome to another episode of From the Green Notebook. I'm your host, Joe Byerly, and this week we're diving into the notebook of Chief of Staff of the Army, General Randy George. Now, we cover a lot of ground in this discussion. You're going to learn a little bit about General George's career and some of the most important lessons he's learned along the way. We also talk about the importance of discourse in the United States Army and how leaders can increase it within their own ranks. He emphasizes the power of editing and why great leaders are also editors in their formation, meaning they cut away all the extra fat that's a part of any large organization. We also discuss the need for the Army to transform in contact, what keeps him up at night, and what he does to recharge his batteries. Again, we cover a lot of ground you don't want to cut away during any part of this episode. So grab your green notebooks and please welcome to the show, General Randy George.
Hey, thanks, Joe. Great to join you.
Sir, thanks for taking time out of your busy schedule to talk to me and all the From the Green Notebook listeners out there. The first question I have before I start asking you about lessons learned from your amazing career is, could you share a little bit about your career with our listeners?
Sure. So I'm originally from the Midwest, grew up in Iowa. I was not from a military family, wanted to be a doctor, actually, and wanted to go to college, couldn't afford to do it, and had a veteran that I was working for told me I should join the Army. So I joined for what was going to be a four-year stint, and 40 years later, I'm still doing it and stayed because of the people that I've been around and the mission. You know, it's always been one thing, but enjoyed every bit of it. So married, my wife is my West Point classmate, and we've got two kids, got a son and a daughter. Our son was in for a while, and they both live in Chicago's, and I'm a longtime Chicago Bears fan. So it's been a rough several decade run with them.
As you look back on your career, what was something that you believed early on? Maybe when you were a junior officer or at West Point, or even a lieutenant colonel, that now looking back, you're like, that wasn't true.
Well, I mean, I can think of a couple of things. And I think your perspective changes over time, where when I was a brand new lieutenant, I would look up at, you know, certain people that came of a certain rank and would wonder, hey, you know what, they're not down here. How can they possibly know what's going on? And I remember, you know, having an opportunity to, you know, have interactions with battalion and brigade commanders and figure out, okay, obviously they've lived a whole bunch of time here. You know, they were a wealth of wisdom for me. One particular story that I remember was, and this was back to thinking that the higher headquarters always knows the answers, that I was in Iraq. I was a major. I think maybe I was just frocked to lieutenant colonel. This is back in 2003. A bunch came from DC, you know, from the Pentagon. Some pretty high up folks were telling us, and we were on the ground. And, you know, we had said, hey, we think we're seeing a low grade insurgency. And I remember everybody in the room that came from the Pentagon saying, no, that's not what you're seeing. You know, you have it all wrong. And I remember thinking to myself, damn, you know, I don't think we do. And so I guess for both of those stories, what I've learned is that, you know, a lot of this comes down to the people asking the right questions through the years. Your higher headquarters may not always have the right answer on things, you know, and some of those things go with your gut. And that would be the big thing.
So do you find yourself now asking way more questions as the chief of staff than maybe you did before?
Sure. I mean, that's kind of how I learn things. And I've actually grown up in all those formations, but I spend a lot of time asking questions. And I think that's the best way. I mean, if you want to get, there's two aspects. One is ask a lot of questions. And then two, why I try to get out of the Pentagon is get out and see what's happening inside of formations and talk to people. I've been to three or four different installations here just in the last 2 months, talking to company commanders and first sergeants, talking to battalion commanders, brigade commanders, division commanders, and asking questions about what's going on. I think that's the best way to really find out what's happening.
You bring up a great point, sir. Do you think that sometimes, like as leaders, we think that we can just kind of hang out? You know, again, this goes back to false beliefs that we can just kind of hang out in the headquarters and get briefings and, you know, weekly command and staffs or training meetings and kind of think we understand what's out there.
I don't think that you're going to find a commander that's out there that abides by that is not going to be an effective commander. And you can usually tell those fairly quickly. I can tell in my interactions with people who actually know what's happening inside their formations, what's going on the ground. So no, I don't think they can do that. And, you know, one of the things that was very troublesome I just heard on a trip was, you know, company commanders telling me that they had to spend a whole bunch of time inside their office inputting data, which is DTMS, which is in my crosshairs. At this particular time to completely get rid of that damn system. But if people are in, you know, are inside putting data in, they're not out with their troops, understanding what they're doing, how they're training, what's going on with their maintenance program, then they don't know their unit.
I don't know how good the resolution is on the video, but I had tear just rolled down my cheek.
You're a big DTMS fan?
No, it was a tear of joy. It's funny. I've heard, you know, people that I work with make the same complaints that I made when I was in there. Shoes, and sometimes you just feel helpless,
yeah,
about it. So I am so glad that that's in your crosshairs.
Yeah, I mean, I think these are real simple things that we have to look at. You know, for some of this we have to look at data, and you know, how much we are asking company commanders and first sergeants with. I mean, that was my question that I just had down at Cavazos. You know, what are we doing with that data? And maybe all we need is ACFT stats and some weapons qual for E4 and E5 for promotion. And then the rest of it, we shouldn't worry about. So I'm confident we can get a good system out to company commanders, and we're going to focus on doing that.
Sir, there are now two cheers of joy rolling down both cheeks. That's awesome. Because I think a lot of times these systems were developed with the best of intentions. And then over time, they just grow into these unwieldy behemoths that end up actually pinning leaders down instead of enabling them. So that is exciting.
You know what was a little bit disappointing to me is that what the kind of the expectation that I'm also you know, or my expectation is that when people see these kind of, that we're doing some of these things that are dumb, that people are raising this as an issue, or they're just saying, hey, we're not going to use this anymore. It's like I've told everybody, if it's not going to help your formation become more lethal, it's not going to help you build cohesive teams, then we really got to question what we're doing with it and why we're spending any time on it.
I'm curious. I want to pick your brain about all the lessons, you know, you've learned. What was one of the hardest lessons that you've learned throughout your career?
I think I've probably learned a hard lesson at every level. One that jumps out at me is, because I still tell the story, and I remember telling my son before he went to Ranger school, was in February showing up at the other side of the river crossing and opening up my wet weather bag, you know, undoing my gooseneck and pulling out two shirts and not having a dry pair of pants to put on. And so I always tell him that story. That was the old PCC, PCIs, that always check your stuff, that's kind of stuck with me since then. That's really is just the basics. And I think whenever you skip being really good at the basics and getting good at things like that, then generally you're going to have some problems. Another big one that stands out at me was I was a brand new major. I was supposed to run the training for the JCF AWE. So this was the new advanced warfighting exercise. And there was a whole bunch of systems. And I was down at Fort Hood in this great big auditorium, and they were going through this conditions check. And I stood up in the middle of this meeting, and I was, you know, definitely one of the junior members that was in there. And I, you know, stood up and basically told them that the systems did not work. This wasn't going to work. And I don't know why we needed to tell the unit, and this was going to be a big problem. Thankfully, I was right. But I probably, looking back on it, it didn't save me from getting a whole bunch of ass chewings. I think I had a record number that day. There probably was a different way that I could have done it. And I remember a brigadier general pulling me aside and said, you know, and basically saying, hey, you could have come and there's a different way to kind of present that information. So that was a valuable lesson for me at the time. I got scarred up a little bit through it and obviously came out okay. But like I said, I've learned a bunch of lessons all along the way. Still learning them, unfortunately. What I'm trying to do now actually is, and this is what I talk about with sharing, is that you actually, this is the big thing on strengthening the profession, is that, which is not just writing, it's sharing the things that, you know, when things don't go well for you, you know, passing that on to your teammates and saying, hey, don't do this. The battalion commander just leveled me out here a little bit for, you know, doing this. You may not want to do this. So I think that's how you want to learn, but I have not always been successful at learning. I've done enough my own hard way.
I know for me personally, I used to always blame stuff on everybody above me. Like it was always everybody else's fault. You know, everybody at the battalion, the brigade, the division, everybody could be doing a better job. And then as I've climbed the ranks, I realized that a lot of people are doing the best they can and trying their hardest. And so I have a lot more empathy now as a squadron commander. And I do my best to try to help more junior folks approach things with a little bit more grace than maybe I would have given folks younger. So I appreciate you saying that.
Well, I think the other thing, this gets back to, I think we've all kind of learned that we've had some conversations back here. It seems like the longer you've been around, the more you realize you've got to learn and the more, you know, that you, you know, need to dive into different things. But I do think that this is why sometimes it certainly helped me before I was a company commander that I was a brigade AS3. I did have a different view when I went down and, you know, could kind of understand a little bit larger picture. So I think all of those, that's what's, I think, great about our system is getting out and having different experiences, having other, getting great leaders like you that have had other, those kind of things. I think that context always helps.
For me, I thought a path in the military was very straight. You have to do these things. You have to do these certain jobs. And that's what equated to success. And now I've you know, looking back, I realized that those zigzags along the way, getting those experiences that may have been off the beaten path, have actually helped me, you know, gain a much better appreciation for everything else the Army has to offer, even the Joint Force has to offer. And I think I'm trying to do a better job now of guiding younger folks, let them know that the path can be a little bit of a crooked one and not a straight one.
Yeah, I mean, I've had a couple of those zigzags. That other job that I was mentioning earlier where I got my ass chewed was one of them. And I mean, I took a lot of lessons away from that. It was the first time and I had to like plan a budget. I had to hire people, had to do things, and it was working in TRADOC. I'm very thankful for that experience, but that was definitely a zigzag. So I think we all have, you know, those kinds of things. I think it's the old adage where you just kind of bloom where you're planted. I have, you know, I do think that that's true, and you're going to meet great people wherever you go. And that's generally been my experience.
Speaking of people, you know, you've commanded at all levels, and the warfighting mission is first and foremost, clearly in your mind. But how did you approach cohesive team building along the way?
One of the things that I tell Joe every time I talk to any commanders that are out there, I have, and I know this has been your experience, that you will not have a successful unit unless you are, you know, working every day to build a cohesive team. You're doing the things that you need to do to take care of your soldiers, make sure that your families are informed, because they can be combat multipliers for you as part of it. So I think that that has to be part of it. That's why it's a commander's responsibility to do all of that. And I think that, again, every good unit that I've been in, that's been a part of it, all of that, you know, building a cohesive team. And there's a lot to, that starts with just the simple stuff of having good training management and being predictable and good maintenance management. It comes with welcoming and making sure that people are, you know, coming into your unit and families are welcome, soldiers are welcomed, and how you onboard them and talk about your standards. It's the little things of tradition that I think with hail and farewells. I don't know if you do like open 2CR spur rides. I mean, you name it. All of those things, talking about our history. I've been very blessed and been in great units like that. And that was the atmosphere that was a part of it. And it's what kept me in through the years, was exactly that, was being a part of that cohesive team.
You brought it up, so I got to talk about it. But, you know, the fact that, that all of our units, the heritage that's out there, regardless of, you know, if you're in the Ranger Regiment, the 2nd Cav Regiment, or the 4th Infantry Division, there's like just so much cool stuff to tap into. And I got to see it while I did an internship in the 82nd. You know, like for our newcomers, instead of doing a briefing in an auditorium, we do this really tough physical fitness session in the morning with myself and my sergeant major. And then we run everybody over to the 2CR Museum. And we talk about how everybody already played their part in the history of the organization. Now it's your turn to live the legacy. And it's what you do now that determines what the second half of this museum develops out to be. So I think that's like something really cool that we have. We've got habit and history that we can share with folks in the organization. So I'm really glad you talked about the onboarding.
Yeah, IPLA, it's a great museum. I've actually been a part of, you know, done that over there in the past with units, and guaranteed that they'll remember that for the rest of their lives. They won't remember a PowerPoint briefing.
Yes, sir. Well, you're on the podcast right now, sharing lessons from your career. You've talked a lot about your fourth priority, which is strengthening the profession. I'd like to talk a little bit now about strengthening professional discourse. When you say that, what exactly does that look like to you?
I mean, there's a couple of different ways on discourse. And I think what we, you know, what we owe, and I talked to commanders, and it was just talking to a group today, a joint group, and just talking about, you know, having showing courage and what, you know, needs to be said. And this doesn't have to be, you know, you can do it, I think, in different forums. So I think it's up to the leaders to set the right environment for that, first and foremost. I mean, you do that in your battalion to let people know, hey, listen, I want feedback on what's going on. I want to understand what's happening. It doesn't mean that we always get the answer we want, but we, you know, have an open discourse about the challenges that we have, the issues, kind of what we're doing to get forward. I do think that that's a leader's responsibility to set, kind of set that environment. And I'm trying to do that as well at our level with even just simple things of when we send up sit reps, that sit reps are, you know, that we're not trying to just say, hey, here's all the great things that we're doing, but we're actually having discourse and a dialogue about, you know, the challenges that we're facing, what we're doing well, you know, where we're having some struggles and maybe we need help. And I just think we have to get, those are good habits to have. And I think I have to lead by example in that respect.
What advice would you give? I'm going back to, we did an episode called Becoming Coachable. I interviewed Marshall Goldsmith too, who has coached CEOs. And one of the things that we talked about was asking for feedback. And one of the things that they said is like, when, you know, you're getting this type of feedback, the feedback you're talking about, not just the everything is awesome messaging, but hey, we're having challenges here. So one of the things that in those two episodes they talked about was, you know, just saying thank you and not trying to explain it away, not crushing somebody when they give you that feedback. So I'm curious for you, what advice would you give to commanders below you as, you know, we try to get more honest in, you know, sit reps and not necessarily just polish a stone and shoot it up?
Well, I think that I'm still a fan of, you know, praising in public. And then if you've got something specific that you want to talk about where you're looking for maybe a course correction, that those are, you know, better done in private and understanding what that is. Because in general, I believe everybody's trying to do the right things that are out there. What I do, for example, to try to get discourse going at the, and as sit reps, for an example, is I literally try to, I read every bit of it and ask questions and make comments. And I do it in all caps. And I've had people make fun of me for doing that, but answering it back and try to get the conversation going. And then again, to your point on, if there's something that I have a very specific question on and the audience is big, I normally will cut that down and go point to point with the commander and say, hey, I've got some concerns about this specific issue or that specific issue. I will tell you the one, and a lot of that I've taken, and this is how you take things through time, is I thought that, you know, General Votel, I watched him when I was in as the DDRO, J-35 on the joint staff, was watching how he was very good at using his the sit rep, is to let people know what was happening in the, when he was CENTCOM commander in the AOR, what help he needed, actions in the queue to get the staff going. And all those things, it was very effective. I used to say it was the most effective piece of paper that came into the building. And if commanders spend their time writing those things and getting involved with them, I think it can have a good impact and help their organization.
Over the last 4 years, I've developed a morning ritual of reading, writing, and reflection. But before I do any of that, I brew a hot cup of my favorite coffee, Alpha Coffee. They make premium 100% Arabica coffee, and Alpha has some of my favorite blends. They have Dawn Patrol, which is a nice medium light breakfast blend. I also enjoy Charlie Don't Surf, which is a medium Kona blend. And when I go to the field for training, Alpha comes with me because they also make K-Cups and they make instant coffee too. You've got to try their Seven Summits instant coffee. Not only do they have great coffee, they're a great veteran-owned business who has shipped over 22,000 bags of coffee to deploy troops. They also offer a 10% discount to members of the military and first responders. You can find a link to their website in the show notes, so go check them out and make Alpha Coffee part of your morning ritual and taste the Alpha difference. And kind of bringing the scope out a little bit, you know, something that's near and dear to my heart is professional writing and what you guys have done with the Harding Project. How important is that to you when it comes to the profession of arms?
I always tell the story of being a company commander and getting, you know, back then we got all the hard copies and, you know, looking through those. I mean, that was gold for us. Looking through that, we were getting lessons from across, from, you know, our peers across. So I think that that's critically important. I know you have established a culture of that in your battalion and just had a, you know, just saw one of your captains wrote something for Modern Warfare Institute. Just was down at Cavazos and, you know, thanked a lieutenant for in 1-8 Cav for what they're doing. So, I mean, I think it's great and they're sharing that. What we really want to do is make sure that it's tablet and phone friendly so that people can just pick it up and they don't have to search through the PDF format. So we're working towards that. That's one of our goals, you know, to get that knocked out this year. I think that from what I'm seeing, and we're trying to recognize all the great things that are happening out there, that the pace is actually picked up. And that's kind of what we're seeing. We've got a lot of great leaders out there with a lot of great ideas, and it's wonderful to hear them all.
You know, even looking at From the Green Notebook in the last like 7 months, this is a website that's pretty much run by captains across the Army that haven't even met each other in person yet. I'm thinking of like Captain Jack Hadley, Captain Rebecca Siegel, Captain Jake Pettit. I mean, they're editing articles like in their free time, helping everybody from cadet to colonel, full bird, edit and make stuff publishable to share lessons. So I think it's such a great tool. And I remember being scared the very first time that I ever published something. But you quickly get over that fear, and it's really cool to see it make an impact beyond your circle. And there's so many people out there right now, like helping people edit. And it's just, I think the ecosystem right now is awesome.
Yeah.
For writing.
Well, and I appreciate all that you're doing, and there's a bunch of commanders out there, and anybody who I know, the Harding Project can help with any of the units that are, you know, wanting to get some of that started. The other thing that I talked to commanders about too is some of this is just sharing lessons also inside your formation. And you can do a lot of that informally and passing things around. So I think wherever we can do that, it's going to strengthen our profession.
And on that, sir, you know, you're talking about the hard copies of Infantry Magazine back in the day. And even like when I started From the Green Notebook, the landscape has changed even more. Like podcasting was still pretty nascent when this blog started, and now it's more popular. There's YouTube videos out there. There's Instagram reels. You know, there's particular Reddit forums and even social media. Do you see the professional discourse just solely in the writing and sharing lessons learned unit, or do you kind of see it as a much larger ecosystem?
No, I think it's part of it. This is why, I applaud what you're doing. I think that this is, it's got to be more broad. I do want, you know, for us, what we wanted to do also was let everybody know that they can come inside the Army and have these kind of conversations. And, you know, that was kind of the idea behind the Harding Project. But I think all of these, and we talk about all of them to include From the Green Notebook, I think are ways that professionals want to share ideas and learn and grow and get better. And I think that it's all good. You know, we need to embrace all of these mediums, I think, to help make us better and more professional.
Now, we talked about writing. I'd like to talk about reading a little bit too, which is another favorite topic from the Green Notebook. What are some books that you recently have read that have helped you in your job now?
I've been reading a lot over the last 5 or 6 months that are probably more focused about how the environment is changing and what the Army needs to do, you know, to adapt to it. One that I read over the holidays and then we met here was by Jack Watling. I don't know if you've met him, Joe, from RUSI. He wrote The Future of War, and it's a very good book. I recommend it. It's a little bit technical, a little bit dense, but, you know, he spent 8 months or more, you know, straight on the front lines in Ukraine and kind of seeing how war is adapting. I read also right after the holidays, it was called Real Soldiering. I'm trying to remember the Brian, I don't remember who, he's down at Texas A&M, former retired out of the Army. And he looked at the interwar years, you know, what the Army had, how we'd adapted through those. And, you know, that was instructive. Given everything else that I've read, I've read other books like West with Giraffes, because my wife told me that was a really good book, and it was a really good book. It wasn't necessarily professional. I just got sent a book by Harold K. Johnson, who used to be the chief of staff back in the 60s, was a prisoner of war back in the Philippines. So pretty eclectic. I like David McCullough. I like Eric Larson, Nathaniel Philbeck. I mean, I generally have authors.
Another one that Colonel Dave Butler and the SMA got me hooked on was Peak Mind by Dr. Amishi Jha.
Yep.
And
we just had Amishi just came. We just met with Amishi here. And I probably read the first three chapters of it. And then I actually read the first chapter I read in that book was chapter 10, which was kind of the, you know, leafing through it. Hey, why is this important to us? Why do we want to do things? But I think that, you know, the whole idea that you need to exercise the mind, just like you exercise your muscles, I think is hard to argue.
It is, sir. It's the one book that's kind of even changed how I'm doing my job now. It's the one thing I probably wish I would have read. She didn't write it 10 years ago, but I wish I read it 10 years ago. What are some of the challenges right now that are keeping you up at night? You talked about the interwar period. I think sometimes it feels like we may be in one of those as we speak.
Well, I will tell you probably top of the list of the challenges that we're facing is recruiting. You know, spent a lot of time focused on that. And I think we made some adjustments here, the secretary and I, last September, and things are getting a little bit better. But that's obviously going to be a long-term problem or challenge for us that we're going to have to work through. I'm really focused on continuous transformation. And as you know, this gets to how we're going to fix the dang network and, you know, make sure that we have small, nimble, low signature C2 nodes, easy to use devices. And we're getting ready to go out and see what we're doing with that out at NTC. I think the technology exists, but that's something that I'm going to stay very plugged into and drive that. We have to change how we're buying things and, you know, what we're getting inside of our formation. And that gets to unmanned aerial systems, really unmanned ground systems, all of it, and be much quicker about, you know, what we're doing to infuse that kind of technology into our formation. And we're doing some of that with transforming in contact. Counter UAS is another one. So I got a pretty long list of things right now. And I didn't even mention DTMS that we talked about earlier.
I'll have to say this, for people who don't normally listen to the show, I try to keep church and state separated. I try not to talk about my day job too much on the show, but I can't help it. You know, like in 2CR, I've got to brag on one of my fellow commanders, Lieutenant Colonel Matt Pioza. He just went in his formation and was like, who wants to change things? And he was like, who's good with 3D printing? And all of a sudden, there's like soldiers working around the clock iterating on, you know, creating droppers for drones and just constantly iterating on it. And I see stuff like that. And, you know, stuff Colonel McChrystal's been doing to help enable him and to do all that stuff. I think that's pretty cool to see that stuff being enabled right now out in the force.
Yeah, I'm always so proud when I've heard about some of that stuff that's going on over right now in 2CR. And, you know, I was over there last August and seeing what you guys are doing. The same with innovating with what we're doing with the network. And, you know, one of the things I tell everybody up here is most of the good ideas are going to come from inside of our formation, from the people that are actually out there doing it. And what we have to do is harness it, figure out how to resource it, get it inside of our formations. That's kind of the idea behind transforming in contact that we're going to do with units, is let them prototype new structures, prototype new, you know, test new equipment, see what works. You know, what do we need for UAS structure at the platoon, company, battalion level? What do we need for counter UAS, EW, all of those things? And I think it's going to happen the best when we have it out inside the formation rather than us putting it together in a PowerPoint up here and sending it out.
I'm amazed, you know, like, I'll give you an example. And then for listeners, this is the last thing I'm talking about my day job, I promise. But like, we wanted to create a fitness app so people could compete in a squadron against each other in different workouts. And we had named workouts. And we just found a soldier who was super passionate about coding. And within like a couple of weeks, we have our own website and fitness app where everybody's, you know, talking trash against each other for who's number one, who's number two. And so I think there's so much out there, so much talent that we have. It's just a matter of letting people do their thing.
I mean, we have another good example with, we have junior NCOs and officers that built, you know, we were everybody was talking about how we would have an app, you know, that would talk about when you move to a garrison. You know, we did have the digital garrison app, and this was a bunch of, you know, four or five NCOs and officers that put together an app, and for like $1,000. And I don't know what we were spending on everything else, but a lot more than that, that installations want, that it really works. It's, you know, tells everybody when things are open, what's the traffic at the gate. You know, they just pulled all kinds of things in. And we have that kind of talent inside of our formation. And the more we can unleash that, the better.
I'm done talking about my day job. You're talking about fighting DTMS. And I know that stuff like that, when it's entrenched in an organization, like, it takes a lot of effort and a lot of energy to combat. So how do you recharge your batteries in a job that, I guess you've been sprinting now for the last, since what, 2003? So how do you recharge your batteries when you start feeling yourself getting worn down?
I always, you know, get the From the Green Notebook podcast and then sit at home. And I like spending time with my family. I always have. That's always been a, you know, for me, a, you know, a recharge. And so I'm very deliberate about when I go home, is putting things up and being very focused on, you know, spending time with my family. I like to work out. You know, for me, if I'm not getting that every day, that has, you know, psychological impacts as well as everything else, physical and not feeling. So I'm a sports junkie. You know, like almost any kind of sport, like playing most, I'm not as good as I used to be at any of them. Enjoy sports. And I love just walking my dog. I do, you know, back to joking about your podcast, I walk my dog and listen to podcasts, listen to books. I do that a little bit every day, you know, just walk at night and do that. And that is very relaxing for me.
Do you find that it's hard? And have you gotten better at it over time? Like, if you're spending time with your family or watching the Chicago Bears lose, do you find like you've gotten better about just focusing on the task at hand and trying not to worry about the entire army or, you know, the division or?
Yeah, I think I've gotten better at that. I really try to kind of set boundaries and say, hey, I've had certain jobs, obviously, where I couldn't set boundaries. I mean, there was times when I was on the joint staff, I could set whatever boundary I wanted, but the phone still rang and I still had to, you know, do things. So I've had those kinds of job that those are a little bit more challenging. But even then, I would always say, hey, at a certain time of the night, you know, I'm done checking emails. Would tell everybody, hey, if it's important, call me. I'm not going to get up and, you know, be looking at things and texting, and try to be pretty deliberate about my schedule. So I've kind of gone back and forth after becoming the chief. I think that anytime you're in a new job, and you've probably experienced this, you probably are a little, you know, fall a little bit short when you first get started. And I know that I was that way for probably the first 90 to 100 days and then said, okay, I've got to tighten up here and be a little bit more disciplined about that.
You think that's an important, I won't say skill, but an important trait for leaders and maybe an important practice for them, you know, after they get settled into a job, but in a job where they can actually control and they can actually emulate stuff for the folks below them?
I think it's important. I think for peace of mind and for everything else. I mean, the other thing too, you know, what's hard is everything that you're doing when you first start a job, there's a lot of first. And so I think you kind of realize there are a lot of things I go, okay, I'm not doing that anymore. That's not a great use of my time. And so I had some of those I wanted to learn myself. And I think that's the hardest thing for us to do, is decide what we're not going to do, is stopping doing things. That is probably the biggest challenge. But I think that you have to do that as a leader. And I have kind of at every level, I've always, before going into a job, I've always said, okay, what is it that only I can do that is required to make my formation successful? Where should I spend most of my energy? And I think that's the other thing that you got to do besides what you're not doing, is focused on the things that you know are most important to your formation.
That's awesome advice, sir. And then again, for me personally, I think I used to say yes to everything. Now I've become a really good editor. I edit out a lot now because I've realized over time that, you know, much like DTMS, It's a waste of time. So I'd rather be PTing with my soldiers than worrying about X, Y, or Z. So I appreciate you sharing that with us.
I think that that's important for leaders too. Again, I mean, you know, my thing for any leader that is out there, I think it's important that we help our subordinate leaders edit and decide, you know, what they can't do inside of their formation. I think that that's, you know, critically important. And that's important because I think we all have to decide, and I'll go back to DTMS since we both have a love for that system. You know, one of the things that I told everybody is say, hey, I'm going to put out a, you know, memo on that and to say, hey, what do we, you know, these are the only the important things that are going to go in there. I want to take that risk off of you. I don't want anybody else to think that you have to, you know, put that data in anywhere up and down the chain. And, you know, I think leaders have to help their subordinate leaders edit. They have to go down and find out what's taken there. You know, are you focused where you need to be, you know, doing the things that are going to make your, you know, formation better? And shoot, we also don't want our young leaders sitting around doing admin, you know, late at night. That gets back to the personal, you know, enjoyment of the job.
You know, I've spent the last 20 years being angry about stuff, and now, yeah, you have an opportunity now to fix it. So I'm glad DTMS is, you know, going away at some point. And then, yeah, I think the boundaries thing is so important. I remember, I can't tell you how many times I used to just sit in my bed next to my wife with my government laptop open, you know, banging out emails, wasting precious time. So I think even having those like professional boundaries of, hey, we're not sending emails after duty hours, unless it's in a job where there is stuff going on around the clock, that's very important. And then, you know, even recognizing those rhythms within a training cycle of, hey, we've got some time here where there's people are going to be getting text messages after work, but every other time, like, there's no reason for it. You can figure it out between, you know, 0630 and 1700.
Yeah, I think that because we can communicate more easily doesn't necessarily always mean we should. And I think that that's the, you know, often I go through that myself. I'm thinking I want to send somebody a note, but, you know, I have a, you know, note cards that I keep. And I'll write something down and say, okay, I'm going to see that person, or I'm going to talk to the commanders, and then I can have a discussion. We have changed, you know, instead of all the emails and sit reps that I do up here with the staff, we have we do an our staff close out where I bring them all in and we have, you know, discussion. So I think that there's ways you can to use your term, and I use it as well, as edit, that you can kind of edit some of the, you know, some of the work down. That's important.
It's cool you said that too. Like Juliet Funt, who wrote an awesome book called A Minute to Think, she calls that process yellow note. So, like, you know, the yellow note, whatever, the notes app on the iPhone.
Yep.
She's like, you get the same sensation of banging out a text, writing in there. And then you could just, next time you see the person, or when you're actually at work during work hours, then you can say it to them face to face.
Right.
Instead of just relieving that anxiety in the moment and shooting a text to somebody after hours, just so you feel better.
I'm feeling a little bit like a Luddite. I was doing an old timey, you know, text. I was writing it on a card. So I'm going to have to do better. Maybe I don't get the same enjoyment typing out a text. And so maybe that's part of it.
Well, it is. This show is called From the Green Notebook. So we do have to have some good old fashioned writing in the episode.
Yeah.
Well, sir, what are one or two goals that you want to accomplish by the end of this year?
I want to start to turn the corner on recruiting. I'm going to go back to all the things that you asked me about earlier that said, hey, what are you, you know, kind of focused on? And I want to see, you know, change with that. You know, we're picking the recruiters, how we're picking the recruiters, using the right tech to enable them. So I want to see, you know, us turn the corner. We're doing a little bit better. I want to see a brigade that we're doing, and 2-101 is the first one that we're going through. And I know we're doing some other stuff in Europe and as well with transforming and contact. I actually want to see what a brigade is going to do to actually adjust their formation based on what's happening in the world and the, you know, infusing the right tech into it. I want to get rid of DTMS and, you know, get something out there that works. I would like to see us get better across our formation at editing and getting rid of things, you know, that aren't helping us with, you know, be, you know, more lethal or more cohesive inside of our team. So I told everybody, I got all the leaders together in December when they were here and basically said, you know, we're not talking about 2030. We have to be better this time next year. We should be able to measure ourselves and how we're getting better. You know, we want to continuously transform and, you know, not to look out, you know, at the end of POM cycles, but I think that we can do this inside of our, you know, we have great troopers and great young leaders that can help us really, you know, put some gas on all of this and move quicker.
One last question. All right, I got two last questions. I lied. All right. So we talk about professional discourse, talk about the Harding Project, talk about revitalizing journals. What are a couple topics that, you know, just kind of to throw out there that you'd like to see some leaders across the Army writing on?
Ooh, I've seen a whole bunch. We're looking through a whole bunch of the articles. You know, one of the things that I've seen, it might have been your captain who would talk about it, you know, just like the basics of, you know, assuming command. I don't remember if that was, was that yours?
That was.
What I really like on the stories are just the, again, this gets back to good units are really good at the basics and, you know, do, you know, basic things well. And I always remember one of my articles from way back in, I don't know if it was like 93-94 timeframe, was somebody who wrote an article about a company training meeting and something, you know, just as basic and as simple. So I don't think it, you know, I'm not looking, I think a lot of people are looking for dissertations and, you know, big things. And I think that those are powerful. Those are, you know, little things like that, that are, you know, critically important. If you can't get your training meeting right, you know, at that level, then you're going to have all kinds of other, you know, other struggles. So I can't think anything off the top of my head that I'm not seeing. I'm seeing quite a bit actually out there. Is there something I should ask for?
I think it's really important. A lot of people think that, well, my idea is not good enough. I don't think that there's any reason to publish.
Yeah.
And what I've learned doing this blog now for a decade is that there, yeah, maybe somebody did write on that idea 15, 16 years ago, but like you have a spin on it, you have a story on it, and all you're doing is putting it back in the consciousness of the reader right now. They may not find that article from Infantry Magazine from 86 or the Military Review article from 77, but the article that you wrote in this month's issue of Infantry Magazine or at Modern War Institute or From the Green Notebook, like that's going to get folks talking and having discussions right now.
Yeah. I will tell you too, is it's modern and it's different. And what, you know, I think what company commanders with all that they're dealing with, you know, we've infused all this tech. It's harder, I think, dealing with this and everybody wanting data and doing, you know, everything else that, you know, somebody writing, you know, their contemporary stories about the challenges that they're facing with that, I do think, you know, are needed and wanted and will be read. So I agree with you 100%. We're seeing a lot of that. I love when I see stories from NCOs talking about, you know, what they're doing to get after, you know, building cohesive teams or, you know, with their PT program and their challenges. And, you know, there's a lot of professional literature out there. It's quite different actually having to do that as a platoon leader and a platoon sergeant, as a company commander and a first sergeant. There's just different challenges with that. So I think all of that is good.
Thank you so much for your time this, my evening, your afternoon. This was awesome. Really just getting to catch up with you again. It's a weird thing, and I know you've experienced it too, but like when you stay in the Army long enough, I remember looking back and the chief's picture was just somebody who was on the wall. And after, you know, after being in the Army for a while, all of a sudden it's somebody that you've served with, not just once, but twice. So this was actually a really fun conversation to have again.
Well, I appreciate you having me on, Joe. Great to hear your voice, and hopefully we can get over there and see you all, see all the great things that that 2CR continues to do. So really proud of what you guys are doing over there.
Thanks, sir. Have a good one.
All right. Thanks.
Thank you again for listening to another episode of From the Green Notebook Podcast. If you enjoyed the show, please give us 5 stars wherever you listen to podcasts. It helps us gain visibility and the opportunity to help more people on their leadership journey. Also, make sure you check out our website at www.fromthegreennotebook.com. There, you can listen to past episodes, read leadership articles written by military leaders from around the world. You can sign up for our monthly reading list email where you can learn about new books that are coming out, and our Sunday reflection email that comes out every Sunday morning. Is really short. It's a 2-minute read, but I guarantee you it's going to start your week off on the right foot. Finally, make sure you follow us on Twitter at FTGNNotebook, and you can find us on Instagram and Facebook by searching for From the Green Notebook. Again, thank you so much for coming on this journey with us. I am humbled by the opportunity to learn these lessons alongside you. So please join us next week for another episode of From the Green Notebook, where we're going to help you lead with the best version of yourself. I can't